Welcome to Doctor's Orders with your host, Dr. Baker. Now let's join today's program.
Hello, everybody. Happy rainy, or will be rainy, trending Thursday here in Cincinnati, Ohio. I am your host, Dr. Baker. This is Doctor's Orders. I am the owner of the only business hospital in the world, servicing 14 countries. And I wake up every day looking to make sure that business owners and businesses are more healthy today than where they were yesterday. And so that is the goal of our program, is to talk to you about things that make you better as a business owner or increase the overall reality of your business. And so today's guest, I'm really excited to bring her on. We've got so much to talk about. I'm really uncertain how we're even going to shove it all in because there's so many important aspects to discuss. But we will bring in a Councilwoman Chelsea Clark today to talk about a host of factors. If you want to join the show today, you can at 859-291-2255. Once again, that's 859-291-2255. In the event that you would like to send us a message, you can do so at info@drbaker.us. Once again, that's info@drbaker.us. Now, if any of you have been listening to the show at any given time, you would know that every day is a different topic. And so we segment the show in order to really touch your business in a host of ways. If you were listening yesterday, we had Larry Hart from the Global Chamber on, along with Brady Welsh from Velocity Global. And we talked about how having an open mind toward international opportunity can expand your business. Well, today is Trending Thursday, and we want to talk about some things that are trending. And so my guest today actually hits a couple levels of trends, and one is in the nature of politics, and the other is an entrepreneur and a business owner coupled with education. So she checks off a lot of the boxes that are very important to us as business owners and how we operate and how we think in the world of business. So without further ado, I'd like to bring in today's guest, Councilwoman Chelsea Clark and Democratic nominee for Secretary of State, Councilwoman Chelsea Clark. How are you doing today?
I'm doing quite well. Thank you so much, Dr. Baker, for having me on your show. I'm very impressed with the work that y'all are doing for businesses across the nation and, of course, internationally. So it's a pleasure to be here.
Fantastic. Good news. And in this instance, I want to break the show up into two different forms of a segment because you wear multiple hats. And the hat I want to talk about first is really on the political side, and really give our listeners a sense of, you know, you running for Secretary of State, what that means for everyone in the state of Ohio, and particularly, what does that mean for a business owner?
Absolutely. So the Secretary of State in Ohio has a few different responsibilities and roles. It doesn't mean that these are the same across the nation because they're all charged with slightly different things, but primarily and most notably is being the chief elections officer. So that means that they are the person that certifies the election. They oversee all the election processes. They appoint members to the boards of elections. We have 88 counties in Ohio, and so there's 88 boards of elections that require appointments. They supervise the administration of election laws. They review the statewide initiative and referendum petitions. They chair the Ohio Ballot Board and on and on. Pretty much anything under the umbrella of elections is within that officer's purview. Underneath that, a candidate would file their campaign finance compliance reports to that office. And then what's really interesting is the fact that they are a voting member on the Ohio Redistricting Commission. Now, in Ohio, our Redistricting Commission meets every 10 years, and that's following the decennial census. Why? Because we've got to, you know, figure out our population sizes, people move around, and that's done in order to figure out how we do what is called district lines. So that's the practice of cutting these lines so that certain populations are represented with their, with their elected officials. So it's a 7-member commission, and they have to redraw the boundaries for each of the 99 for the Ohio House and the 33 for the Senate. And so what's happened in Ohio and why this is extremely critical is because last year when the process began following our census, there were maps that were voted on by the dominant party on the redistricting commission. So there's five GOP members and there's two Democrats. And what happened was is they voted for maps as a commission, 5-2 vote. They voted for maps that violated the Ohio Constitution. So in 15 and 18, the folks of Ohio said, hey, we want fair maps. We want fair representation. We don't want a thing called gerrymandering, where people dilute the vote, or these folks that make the maps, they dilute the vote, and then essentially an elected official gets to remain in power in their seat for as long as possible without the will, without people actually voting to that end, because they've gerrymandered the districts in such a way to make it highly likely and basically impossible for there to be another seat had, or another person in that seat. And so,
if I'm a business owner and I hear that and I say, well, maybe I participated in voting before, maybe I have not, what forces me on one side versus the other when it comes to, and this is a very, and I would call it a very individualized approach to how to view politics or even the vote, but you know, most people are thinking, well, what is in it for me? How does that get translated to the everyday business owner? And then what does all of that mean to them?
Well, from the redistricting standpoint, and having maps that are not commensurate with the actual voting electorate, and when you take people's ability to cast their vote away from them so that it's actually meaningful, there's a host of issues that happen to a community. As a business owner, you don't get the funds that you're entitled to, right? There are dollars that are coming in based off of what's happening and people's situations. And you're going to get cut out of those things, especially when it comes to social services or human services for a location. And then when it comes to business, you know, the other charge of the Secretary of State for Ohio is granting the authority to actually do and conduct business. So all the registration and filing and how, you know, you determine your company's status is all done through the Ohio Secretary of State's website as well. So making sure that there are enough supports in the community in order to, you know, have a proficient and sustained business is very important, and how they are able to best navigate through that system can sometimes speak to the strength or the ability of your business to function. So you want a Secretary of State that is fair, that is impartial, and that wants to make sure that you, not only do you have people that are heard so that they can exercise efficiently and vote, but that they also are that you're also overseeing business practices that are helpful to Ohioans rather than harmful.
Well, you talk about the mapping and what does that, you know, and how that translates to just your common business owner. One thing that is true and has been true really since the time of the establishment of this country is that small business is the backbone of the country, and 85% of our workforce is employed by a small business. And when we talk about small business, once again, for reference, for the listeners, we're talking 50 million and under, 500 employees or less. And this is everything from micro and boutique businesses to your startup founders, your mom and pop shops, even what we might consider to be mid-sized businesses could still fall in that category. So in the event that you own a business and you're thinking about the livelihood, number one, of yourself, number two, of the employees that you employ, and then what does that mean for any particular community that you live in, who sits in any of the seats, and particularly at the Secretary of State, becomes really important because, as you mentioned, Councilwoman Clark, that the dollars that funnel into those areas, decisions that are made, well, the people have to take pride in that, and the way that they do it is by making sure that the elected officials represent the voice of the people. And what I'm hearing you say is that this position, what you're running for, is vitally important to really the lifeline of how businesses continue to operate. Is that right?
Absolutely. I mean, we don't have a very easily navigated portal for business owners, especially your small mom and pop. So, you know, I am a from the people, for the people kind of candidate. I'm a middle class, you know, small business owner. I don't have 500 employees. I have under 20. And that presents a certain set of unique challenges. And I enthusiastically support the backbone of Ohio in terms of these mom and pop shops that have well under 500 employees. I mean, we're talking under 100 and less. I support them enthusiastically as my GOP counterparts support, you know, mega corporations. And that's where we have to get to, because for these small businesses as well, you're talking about a lot of outlay in dollars when it comes to having to secure attorneys or certain folks that can handle certain financial vehicles in their startup and launch phases. So we don't want to penalize these, you know, small businesses for that, because like you said, these are the businesses that are the backbone. These are the working class folks that are deciding most oftentimes on making sure that their employees are taken care of before themselves. They're paying their taxes, and a lot of times they're giving everything they have, you know, when these industries and manufacturing plants are closing across our country left and right. And so we need to make sure that we support them. So part of what I will do is starting an Office of Entrepreneurship, working in concert with the Treasury and the Commerce Department, but also making sure that we replicate processes that are working and that are vibrant across this state. There are some counties that are really doing an amazing job when it comes to getting our young people involved, being able to pass the baton, as well as workforce development and helping to support these mom and pop businesses in a very vibrant and efficient and eco way with, you know, even with socially driven economics. And so if we take those models and then we refine those and share that across the state, then that's going to be extremely beneficial, because we're losing out in Ohio. We know that, you know, students aren't even wanting to stay here for graduation or past graduation. So this is just one way that we, you know, beef up our economy. And the way we're going to be able to do that is with small businesses and with making sure that people can vote.
Well, I think in that instance is that, you know, when you think about an area, and I've been told this regularly as a business owner, why don't I move to Atlanta? Why don't I move to Charlotte and those areas that they believe that I may flourish better in? And I would let them know that, well, since business is global, I can do it from anywhere. But the point of me bringing this reality up is that how decisions are made, how laws are passed, what resources are available, all of that is important to a business owner of my magnitude, where, you know, I decide to reside in Ohio. I make Cincinnati my home. And in that instance, what goes on, you know, at the state's capital becomes very important. What are some of the obstacles that you've seen since you've been on the campaign trail with talking with business owners and just making them or helping them understand the importance of not just this race, but all the races politically, and how it ties into how they make a living and how they deal in their own communities to make sure that their communities are viable?
Sure. A lot of it ends up boiling down to resources and the acquisition of those said resources. So as a small business owner, it's what I hear time and time again, and I've had, of course, enough personal experience to write a book on. there's typically a capital challenge. You know, we start businesses with nothing. And then we end up having proof of concept, and then you actually are able to sell something and able to start to make money off the thing. But then you go to, you know, get to acquire capital to cover payroll expenses or what have you. And you've got a million hoops to jump through. And, well, no, now you don't have business credit. But you've got these people that have been, you know, that have had brick and mortars for a year, 2 years, 3 years, and none of that is going towards anything that's meaningful to them on their end to show and prove that, hey, I am a business owner that is paying my bills, I'm working really hard, but I do need the assistance. I mean, we have mega corporations that are getting, you know, million-dollar bailouts. You have to have, we're not just voting for people to pass legislation. You're also voting to make sure that the people that you are voting for and getting in office have an ear for you and want to hear from you. By voting for me, you're going to hear from me. I'm going to listen. And then I've got to take those issues, and then I've got to run, and then I've got to champion those causes and fight like hell for them. And that's not what we're seeing. We're not even seeing where people have direct access to these folks anymore. It's like, well, it's just somewhere out in the ether, and we think that we could fix it, and we'll do a couple, you know, we'll pop up to a couple places and take a couple pictures, but you're not legislatively or making policy that really helps the bottom line of these small businesses or, you know, communities across the state, and that has to be considered. And the best person to consider something like that and champion that work is a, you know, a single mom with two kids that I've got to feed, who started my own business and knows what it's like to really struggle to make sure that something actually works and is sustainable.
Well, you know, when I think about things that I've heard regarding, let's say, business owners, or just even the common person, maybe they don't own a business, but particularly business owners, and they have such a distrust of government to where some, you know, decide that they don't even want to participate, or they don't know enough of the issues, so therefore they just go with a name that maybe they've seen and or heard, but maybe they don't understand the importance and the relevance. How do you carry the messaging on it, and what does it look like to educate just the average business owner on, you know, what these elections mean and how they have a long-term effect on their business?
Sure. And that's always, I think we've done a disservice. And part of the reason that this office is, you know, I'm so passionate about the type of work that can be done here is because this office is about not only protecting and sustaining democracy, but it's also about advancing it. Advancing democracy really means, right, if I've got a group of people, or I've got a single mom or a veteran or whomever that wants to say, you know what, I'm willing to take the risks and the sacrifice to start something on my own, and work even harder than working for somebody else in order to make it, then that means you're part of a special group, and that, you know, you certainly should be considered when it comes to resources and things like that. And I say that because this office has the capability of doing that, but in terms of the advancement of the democracy and protecting it is what we're not seeing. And that's why you see people so disenfranchised. About 10 years ago, you know, civics education started to, you know, there's some changes in it. And what we know, of course, is that this begins with our young people. So I know that from an education standpoint as well, getting our high school students involved and across the board making viable pathways for them to go into industry, either in place of college or after college, and then partnering with our small business outfits, that's extremely vital. You're going to not only help, you're probably helping struggling families where kids need to work. You're helping them build professional behaviors and have a career mindset. And you're giving them lifelong tools, and you're really, really helping to, you know, expand the work of small businesses that don't typically have the cash for large, you know, large payroll or large teams of people. That's one way that, you know, when you vote for people that are passionate about this work and are committed to doing it, that's the level of service that you can get. In terms of making sure that we understand how all these things work, a lot of it we kind of have to go, you know, piece by piece. The fact that you have, like I said, with these maps and what the redistricting does, that all ends up to the bottom line as well. This second primary that we're now in, that we had on Tuesday, the August 2nd primary, cost us over $20 million. You can't tell me that additional $20 million that they had to move over in order to support this primary were good dollars spent. They're not, because what we know is that could have gone back to help our small businesses. That could have gone back to help human services, and all those things end up ultimately helping, you know, the lifeblood of and the backbone of our small community or our communities with our mom and pop.
And how do we go about doing that? You know, that's one thing that I've always thought about. It's mm-hmm. just the sheer cost of how much mm-hmm. campaigns cost. And, you know, by the time we look up at someone that's running for governor, someone that's running for president, you know, those numbers escalate so quickly to where you think, heck, if that was all put in a region, it would have shifted that landscape forever. Mm-hmm. And then what are some of your ideas as it relates to better ways to run these campaigns and to put on elections to where it benefits the people and the community that it's swearing to serve?
And that's a tough question, because American politics, I mean, it's not designed for folks like me, right? It's not designed for young mothers of children, for minorities. I'm a black female. It's got its set of tough obstacles, because in order to quote unquote play, right, or get in there, you've got, there's this idea that you've got to raise, you know, millions upon millions of dollars, because it's, you know, it's a name game. And that's the sad part, because what we've lost is, you know, candidates that are on the ground. I'm not going to outmatch my opponent with the money. He's endorsed by our former president, and that comes with a whole lot of money. But that's also with a chief elections denier, which has no business operating at, you know, in overseeing the certification of elections. That just does not make sense. But because there's so much money in it, people look at those things and equate the dollars to meaning that it's right and it's okay and it's the way to go, when it's not, because you have to look at policy and you have to look at track record. So I think that's a, it's certainly a tricky thing. I am a, you know, like I said, a from the people candidate. You know, we have a grassroots campaign, which is very different. You're not going to see it splashed all over TV, but it is one of those things where we are really actively talking to all 88 of our counties and to folks in them, and trying to understand what are their needs, what are the challenges. For instance, in Wood County is our largest geographic county in the state of Ohio. Guess how many ballot boxes they have there?
I would one.
They got one, right. So how
that was a random guess.
It's right, but how is that accessible or conducive to a working family? By the time you go to these smaller, you know, rural places, it's a good hour and a half minimum, maybe, just for a round trip drive to a ballot box, with gas prices being higher. And, you know, the wages in some of our rural counties are much, much lower than urban places and metropolitan places. Is that servicing and in the best interest of your people when you reach back into the pockets of us as Ohioans and take out $20 million for an unnecessary second primary because you refused to pass a map that was actually legal and constitutional and abided by our Constitution? That's what you have to look at. Are these people, or are these people just paying, are they just paying for their seats? And that's the scary part. And I think that's what I'm finding across the state. What people are getting so upset about is that you're just paying to stay in your position. You don't care about us. You're not even fighting for us. 74.89% of Ohioans in 2018 amended the Constitution and said, we want fair districts and it has to be met like this. And you failed it five times in unconstitutional maps, and we're still operating off an unconstitutional map.
I would ask a question to that. If we're talking about fair districting, is that when we're looking at disbursement of programs and resources and opportunities for businesses, the fair mapping would then streamline that and balance that out a lot better. That would be more conducive for all people throughout the state, correct?
It really would, because what's happening is when you dilute, when you get a representative that then you're trying to, you know, crack and pack, as they call it, like you're trying to take, okay, some heavily dense urban populations in Columbus, and then you want to, you know, spread them all the way down to, you know, Pickaway or something like that in these rural places. What kind of representation is that? Is it fair? Because that representative now has to choose between, you know, two to three extremely different pockets of people, not just in terms of political thought, but also in resource need, also in geographic need, environmental issues that are different. They're vastly different. So how can you successfully fight for both? That's why you have representatives that represent a certain population, and per the Constitution, it's got to be a pocket of people that have those similar political thoughts and geographic, and it has to be contiguous because of that very reason. That's how you get fairer representation, and that's how you get resources that are going to come back to your community that also will support small business. I mean, small businesses need libraries to be able to go and print things off for really inexpensive. They need all these other services that are free to very low and inexpensive, so that they can continue to do what they need to do.
Well, what do you say to anyone, or I guess even to the masses, as we're now in this era where, at least in my lifetime, I've never seen Democrats, Republicans, or the nation be so divided on one line versus the other when small business is everyone and it's all types of people. It's anyone in the United States of America. It doesn't have a political line. How is something so divisive able to bring together something that really couldn't be more American, which is how do we create a business in order to provide for our family, you know, have a home and then send our children to college? How do we combine this message and how do you do that as a politician?
Well, you know, I have pretty much the same message, really no matter where I go. And one thing that I tell people is that the Secretary of State, because of its charge in making sure that every eligible Ohioan has the access, the unencumbered access to the ballot, that it should be chaos-free, and it should be an efficient and secure process. That is the fundamentals of what we are talking about. And in order to be good at that job, you can't really see party. You have to put, party politics is what you're talking about. And it's really destroying the fabric of America. It's destroying this beautiful and fragile thing that we call democracy. It's what's made us a superpower and the envy of the world, but that is obviously changing right now. So that seat right now is occupied by an extreme partisan who has bent to every single whim of the GOP. And that is not what that seat is about. That seat is not a red seat. It is not a blue seat. It is a red, white, and blue seat. That has got to be, in my opinion, the most impartial seat that exists in your state government because of the precious access you have to voting, which is absolutely American. And so with me, that is exactly what you'll get. I am not, I'm a Democratic nominee, but partisan politics don't sway me one way or the other. What sways me is the Constitution and what I am charged to do on behalf of the people. And you can't be afraid of the voice of the people. In terms of, businesses, I think I may have actually forgotten. I got a little in my soapbox and excited there. But in terms of businesses in that regard, nothing, you're right, there's something inherently American about being able to start your own business. But what are we doing to help our businesses? We can't offer more support and help to businesses that are, multi-million dollar mega corporations than we are doing, like you said, to the backbone, to the 85%. And what that looks like in terms of help is something that we have to give. Like I said, making sure that we've got an office of entrepreneurship so that there is a home for people like me, for our small business owners, so they're not getting the runaround, so that they don't have to try to speak legalese just to file this document or to file this paperwork, so that they really have the supports that they are entitled to in order to have good business. I will also submit this. As a Secretary of State, it's the fact that you have enough power to help a business to launch itself and file and register itself. There's also got to be some checks when it comes to these businesses that are really doing harm and inflicting harm on Ohioans. We've seen time and time again, violations and you're taking people's money and this and that. Listen, if I can help you to do business in Ohio, there's also got to be some levers that can help you to move on and not do the good folks of Ohio bad either. And so those are some things that we are of course looking into as well when it comes to this role.
Well, what's unique about the Secretary of State is that every business starts with you all, and that's how do I have to file? And most times, that's the only thing that a business owner knows about the Secretary of State is that they had to go on there and do a business search and file, their LLC or their articles. How does, what's the job, or how big is the task? Let me ask it this way. How big is the task to get people to know that the Secretary of State is larger than just filing your business with them and then just holding that record, but that it's actually significantly more, and that if it's used appropriately, we all can grow the state of Ohio together?
I mean, I think that's a heavy lift and a heavy task, but I also think that, I'm up for that, for one such as that, because what's happening is we, again, when you mismanage funds, I'm a fiscal conservative, and there's been such an extreme mismanagement of funds that could have helped to educate people. I mean, I would bet most of your listeners have no flipping idea that on August 2nd, we had our second primary. So much so that we had I think it was 680,000 people show up. That's such a dismal turnout. It's hard to even articulate how bad that is. It is extraordinarily bad. And the reason it was bad is because you have a Secretary of State that's not focused on making sure that people know what is happening and what is going on. So you inflict harm, you cause a problem, and now you've got to have a second primary based on unconstitutional maps. But then you don't, share with people and let people know what's going on. A lot of this stuff, like I said, this starts in our communities, and our business community can do a world of help in helping advance and spread that message of what else the Secretary of State's charged with. The very essence of our civic responsibility. So partnering with our small businesses and our community service and nonprofit entities, those are great ways to help share the message about what it is the Secretary of State does and why it's so important. And you mentioned earlier at the start of this, this is a very, very critical time in terms of the whole political landscape. The way we're looking at this is this is the most important election in terms of midterms of our life, of my lifetime. So I'm under 40, but in roughly the past 40, 50 years, this is the most important midterm because of what's at stake in 2024. None of us are confused that democracy has been taking some punches in the past 5 years. Okay. And it's going to be a very, very difficult based on this midterm to protect our democracy come 2024 if you have people in place that are hell-bent on dismantling what it is that we've come to know as the promises that the U.S. has always wanted to deliver on. So we need the business community. We need that small business engagement and all those partnerships in order to advance this message. And that's what I'm very, very much focused and concerned about. I'm doing it not only while I'm campaigning, but we'll certainly do it as the chief elections officer as well, and making sure that people are aware that our boards of elections are confident, that they are empowered, that they are properly resourced, because they're not, and that our poll workers feel safe and appreciated.
Well, I think all of those aspects are vitally important, especially when you brought up the numbers or the lack thereof of those that know what's going on. And all of that permeates to execution, because if you don't have awareness, then you won't do anything. And then if nothing gets done that way, then essentially another agenda can be pushed, and that agenda is going to favor whoever's connected to that agenda. That's how all of the world works. And so it behooves us to be much more aware about all things surrounding small business, and no place to start in your Secretary of State's office, as we aforementioned before. We need to take a break for station identification. Today's Trending Thursday is brought to you by Bazemore Beard Oil, and that's Bazemore, Bazemore Beard Oil. It can be found at bazemoreproducts.com. If you are starting a beard, have a beard, want a more quality beard, thicker beard, luscious beard, better smelling beard, Bazemore Beard Oil is the way to go. Three fragrances: Nova, Flight, and Wage. Once again, for a more elite, more premium, more quality beard, Bazemore Beard Oil is where to go. That's at bazemoreproducts.com. So everyone, if you're just joining in, we are joined by Councilwoman Chelsea Clark of City of Forest Park and our Democratic nominee for Secretary of State of Ohio, who also happens to be a small business owner, as she is the founder and president of Cincy STEM Lab, which we're going to talk about next. Councilwoman Clark, if anyone wanted to get in contact with you about learning more about how to participate either with the campaign, donating to the campaign, just learning more about the Office of Secretary of State or anything else that would be beneficial, how do they get in contact with you?
They can go to our website, chelsea4ohio.com. That's F-O-R, chelsea4ohio.com. and they can email me at chelsea@chelsea4ohio.com.
Fantastic. And I want to transition a little bit because you are a business owner, and since we're on Doctor's Orders and this is Trending Thursday, we always want to look at what a business owner goes through or things that we should pay attention to make our operations a little bit healthier. Give all the listeners a little background of Scentsy STEM Lab, if you don't mind.
Sure. So Scentsy STEM Lab, STEM stands for science, technology, engineering, and math. Of course, we do a lot of art, so that is called STEAM. We do a lot of that as well. So I built this business about 4 years ago in response to some gaps that I was seeing in the school system. I was an educator and was concerned about kids' ability to problem solve and critically think, especially in the areas of science and math. And so started tinkering with some curriculum that I was designing, and it just kept going. I won a competition, and I said, well, I guess that means I'm better open up. And so I did, and so we've been pretty successful since. So we work with students in delivering hands-on experiential learning opportunities in those areas of STEM and art. And we are at the schools delivering programs during the school day or after school in clubs. We do robotics, chemistry, environmental science, et cetera. We also have camps that are throughout the school year and during the summer. And then we have a very unique partnership with Rockdale in Avondale. And the Urban Learning Garden is a brainchild project of mine. And we partnered, it was taken up and spearheaded by the zoo and PNG and the Cincinnati Reds and Children's Hospital, and we've been able to do some beautiful, beautiful things over there as well. So those are, and then we work with kids K through eighth grade, and then we have an internship program for ninth through 12th graders where we get them a STEM endorsement from the state of Ohio.
Well, you know, with that, you know, anytime that you start a company, no matter what the industry, and obviously you've planted yourself in education, which is very needed, and you're supplementing the efforts of the school systems. Talk to the listeners a little bit about some of the struggles and some of the challenges that exist just with business ownership. And I'd like for you to kind of, you know, from the onset, what did you think was difficult to kind of today, how that's changed a little bit, but things still might present themselves as issues.
There's so many issues. We don't have time for all of them. But my goodness, you think you're doing really great. You had two great days, and then all of a sudden the ceiling caves in because water damage. You're like, oh, hell no. So it gets tough. Let me see. We're going to go with the low-hanging fruit here. You know, when you first start, I had people like, well, why are you doing it like that? And your business is scattered, and you got too many arms, and you got this, and you got that, and you need to focus. Let me tell you something. Had Chelsea listened to that advice, I would not have been able to come through the pandemic. I came through the pandemic with, when I tell you that PPP, I could not find a PPP nothing. couldn't get anything. I think I ended up getting like, maybe just $3,000. Now, you know, in business world, that's like, oh my goodness, that covered me for 3 weeks. Okay, great. So my vision for trying to truly recession-proof my company really proved to be business saving. And then I had to be able to pivot. You know, we don't know when we're going to see another pandemic or when, you know, things are just going to happen. We're living in some really very, you know, precarious and scary times. And you have got to be able to be on your toes and pivot as quickly as possible. You can't be married to a certain, you know, way of doing something or maybe a certain product or maybe sometimes even a certain service when you know that there's a supplemental service or an ancillary service that could be just as good and again help you to achieve your bottom line. Because if you're not in business, I mean, nothing else matters. If you're not effective in changing lives, nothing else matters. So for me, it was a pivot and making sure that I was really honoring my vision for my company, which was really hard to do. And then also a lot of it was creating my own lane. A lot of us, I think, I was really scared in the onset because I actually don't have a background in science or chemistry or engineering or math, and people are always like, wait, what? They're like, are you serious? I'm like, no, Sunny, I don't. What I do know how to do is work really hard and read. I'm a sixth generation farmer, and I can work my tail off. So I know how to read, and I know how to teach people stuff, and that's what I did. I set out to teach myself, and I literally had to build my own lane of expertise in STEM. And you're not going to come to Cincinnati without talking about STEM and not including me in the conversation. It's because I've worked extremely hard in so many different ways at making sure that we provided high level and high quality STEM, and was trying to be, you know, trying to really fill the need and fill the gap and become that expert that I wanted to see that I did not see, especially in someone that looked like me for these kids.
Well, you know, you tell a compelling story, though.
Well, I'm not going to talk about that.
It is, and I want to look at that here in a moment, but you said something that I don't want to get lost on the listeners, is how you were not an expert in the STEM part. And one thing that I've seen regularly is that many people are really good at the function of something, but then they don't have the rest of it. And so they struggle because they're really good in their one element, but there might be 10 elements that lead towards success, and they don't have the other 9 taken care of. In your instance, you know, you were looking at it like, well, I don't have the main, but I do have some other qualities that I can bring to the table, because I can find individuals that are really good at doing the stuff, jumping things that I need them to, as I go ahead and make sure that a quality opportunity is being provided. And that's a different paradigm. When I say different, not that it's revolutionary in one sense, it's just that the common way of going about it is I'm really good at doing the thing, so I do the thing. And so that leaves a lot of these businesses left wanting from that. And you were about to mention capital, and you know, we have Financial Fridays every Friday, and I want to talk a little bit about that, because one reality of being in business is to generate revenue, but the other component is the revenue that it, or the money that it takes in order to generate revenue. And so talk a little bit about even some of the struggles there, because I know all my listeners have dealt with that issue. They're always asking questions about money and where can they get more resources, or is anyone else, you know, facing the same, you know, financial hardships that we are? Any stories or anything that you would like to share with us?
You have some good stuff from before I wanted to pick back up, but I'll leave it alone. One thing is that, you know, it really irks me when people say, you know, you see a Facebook post and it's like, I'm ditching my 9-to-5 and I'm going full time on my business. And I'm like, honey, hold on now. Do you got some insurance? You got a year's worth of mortgage paid? I was like, what you doing? And that's what I did. I didn't just say, I've got 2 children to take care of. I'm a single parent. I didn't say, well, you know what, I believe so much, which I believe in myself, but I believe in myself so very much that I am just going to, what I'm going to do is just, you know, get rid of this career and then I'm just going to jump full on in. That's not how it took pieces, it took time, and what I did was I kind of would partition, I worked 2 jobs, and then I'd take some of the second job money to kind of support the business. And then the business started to make some money. So then I put everything back into that business, and then I did that for the second year, and then I did that for the third year. I refused to take any of my money because I needed to grow it to a certain place, because I could not get any financial, I had just gotten off from a divorce, so I just could not, you know, I was not credit capable of getting any capital. And so that brought us really into the pandemic. Last year was our third year, and we had 4 other sites that we operated in the summer. And when I, you know, like that pivot I was telling you about, we started virtual STEM, and I virtual STEM the heck out of these kids. And we had kids, and we did like 2,000 kids. They were going outside of the state. They were working so well, and we were able to use that. And then I came upon a great opportunity with a commercial property. We've now got 7,000 square feet. We moved in last February, and now this is our first year and a half, and now we've tripled in size, and now we had 11 sites this summer. So it's but this is the first time in just this past year that I started to pay myself. And I'm saying that to say that there's a transition process. I wanted to make sure I had a very healthy and in the black business before I, you know what I mean, before I just took it all in and full-timed myself. And I think that there's a way to do that. Is it hard as hell? Absolutely. Was I cleaning toilets for free in the bottom of a church because I didn't have my own place and I had to basically use their space? Heck yeah, I did that. But you work really hard for the things that you believe in, and I couldn't be more happy with, you know, our not only our financial position, but also how we've cemented ourselves in the STEM space and the opportunities that are now, I mean, just coming in the school districts and even outside of the state, opportunities that are happening.
Well, you know, you talked about the hard work that you brought to the table right from the beginning, and with that hard work, you were able to see some short wins, and you just mentioned a few of them. I mean, you went from starting it with very little and no technical knowledge of the actual element of STEM to the point where you're running multiple locations in the summer, and then you've got partnerships outlined that allows your STEM, you know, company to grow. But how important is it and was it for you to collect those short wins and then to recognize that they were wins?
That's an interesting question. Recognizing the wins. Okay. That's a hard thing for a person that probably has some OCD characteristics like me. You know, when everything has to be, you know, everything really is, unless it's a 10, you don't want it. So I've had to, that's been a lesson, that I've had to learn. That I've got to be really, really excited and really thankful, thankful for the little win. So in my space, a little win is, okay, we had 20 kids in a class, and 16 of them, you know, were totally geeked. Four of them didn't even want you to look at them and went home and said they hated you and didn't want to come back. Okay, that is a small win. And then the school, you know, like we have Lakota, and they say, hey, you know what, come back. Please come back. We want you again. And what kept happening is those little things just, they just kept happening. But a lot of times those services were for hardly anything or free because I wanted the practice. And it's kind of like that 10,000 hours, you know. I just wanted, let me get my 10,000 hours in, and I promise you at the end of this, I'm going to be a bad mamma jamma, and we're going to be able to do these things really, 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 really well, time and time again. So I think those wins, you as a business owner, you live off of them, because when stuff bottoms out, because they will, the trick is making sure you have a stable enough business and time for when that happens, that you can recover quickly. But, you know, enjoying those great moments or the notes. Every single week we get feedback from our families, and the feedback is just beautiful. You know, some of those intangibles that we get to do with kids that, you know, my daughter never wanted to talk to other people because of the pandemic, and we've got a young lady here now that now she talks to people in the pandemic, and she only cries once a day now. That's huge for a parent who's struggling under all these constraints, and STEM is a scary space and people are considered nerdy and outsiders, they're not athletic. And when you're able to take those kids and instill that confidence and give them something they can be proud of that they get to keep, and they've got a safe place, shoot, there's nothing like it. I get to live off of that, the feeling, that good feeling and that win for months.
Well, you know, it's really important that you're able to see that, because it's so many things that do go wrong as a business owner. And when we say wrong, that's subjective. Wrong being that not as planned, or that things have happened in ways that you didn't anticipate. And because of that, that leads to discouragement, and you're not sure what to do next. And there's so much uncertainty when it comes to running a business that in those instances, those wins allow you to gain some momentum. And even if it was nothing more than to just have enough confidence to say, I made the right decision, I'm doing the right thing, and in this instance, my investments are not in vain, but that something is going to yield from that. You know, talk to us and the listeners a little bit about what I would call as your yield. You know, you set out to increase, you know, STEM in this area. What is it like when you've had students go through your program through completion? Or maybe you've got some repeat students that's coming through there. What is that like now that you've been able to build this business, you've been able to offer the services, you know, to families even that want to have enrichment with their child, and then all of a sudden, because they've come to you, they've now had the opportunity to do better in school? Or share some stories that look like that for our audience.
Oh, goodness. We've got, yeah, those are, the first story that I'll share is we had this little girl, we'll call her T, and T, we had T since we started at our old location in Sharonville, and so T has been in every camp we've had. She's now a sixth grader and been with us 4 years. And so it wasn't until it was March of last year, specifically at a camp. And this was our first time in our new location here in Blue Ash. And I'm watching the students in the classroom, watching the students. They're doing an engineering exercise. And the way she approached the challenge compared to our new students, I just took note of, and it made me kind of sit back and I said, oh my goodness, this is the product of what we've been working toward. She used such high level communication in trying to not only organize the team and their thoughts, but also wanting to consider what was, you know, what the people were thinking, the kids were thinking. She was using engineering language. She's like stability and, you know, balance and, you know, this, you know, that's not the strongest shape. This triangle is the strongest shape. So what if we incorporated this and that? And it just how she was doing it, and then her perseverance. This used to be a little girl who would get, she has a mild learning disorder, and so would get very frustrated if things didn't go her way, and she would cry a lot. And it was okay, because, again, this is a very, very safe place. And to see her, you know, power through and persevere through in a leadership style to completion and then be successful was remarkable. And then I started looking at the other kids. So we have about 60, roughly 61, something like that, percent of our kids are repeat, which kind of makes it a little challenging because we don't end up getting as many new kids in the program. When you sat back, that was what you saw. You saw those kids use a higher level problem solving approach. They critically thought much better in their scientific literacy in terms of what tools are used and necessary for science investigation to happen. They knew those a whole lot better than our counterparts. Now, when it goes to kind of like some quantitative data, one of our schools is, we have several schools in CPS, and we work with a homeless student population called Project Connect. And we had this one particular school for 3 years. When we did testing, we saw a 12% gain in their math scores. That the difference amongst their counterparts was that they had the STEM lab and their other students didn't, that they were based against. And so that speaks to, you know, what we're able to do and accomplish with our students. And I think, you know, when you get messages and gifts and then, you know, you can really see that the parents are appreciative. But the third thing in terms of how we see that yield is through our returning staff. I've got staff here that have been here 2 and 3 years. One kid's been here 4 years. He's graduating this year now, going off to college. I've got another staff member who's, she volunteered with us as an intern. We helped her to get the STEM endorsement through the state of Ohio doing her field experience here. Got her over $20,000 in STEM-based scholarship. She's now a mechanical engineering student at UC, and she's, you know, I'm at my office now. So she's down in the other room taking care of our Newton class in engineering right now. So when you see kids come back like that, you know that they've been here and they're returning. Our staff, that shows you know how well we're doing. And I believe in the fact that one, they believe in the work that we're doing. They know it's long lasting and impactful, and want to continue to be involved and appreciate what we've been able to help them accomplish thus far.
Well, you know, when you look back and you can see the fruit from all of your effort, you know, in a cliche version, it's, man, it was all worth it. But in this instance, no, it's all a part of the journey. You set out for this type of response. You set out for this type of manifestation of what you wanted to see. It's just that you had to invest into it. And a lot of business owners, I let them know that you have to have a plan. Obviously, everyone has known that. That's not a secret. I'm not a doctor for that reason. But the part of it is knowing that, that if you have a good plan, that you do expect certain things. When I go to tie my shoe, I have a plan to tie that shoe with skills that I've acquired. And when I'm done doing the process of tying the shoe,
all right,
I fully
Liam.
Expect for my shoes to be tied, right, in that instance. And so you have to trust that part of the process. But once again, assuming that there's a process in that instance, any pitfalls or any obstacles that you would offer to our listener base about things that they should avoid, things that maybe you've experienced, things you've seen, things you've researched that you just want to throw out there as a caution for any business owner?
I think we have to be really careful on who we have managing our dollars and our accounting. It really does make sense to interview accountants before. There should be some things that you want to consider. I think that by and large, as business owners, especially minority business owners, you know, we're typically kind of not as well-versed. We're kind of relatively new to the spaces. And when I say that, I mean generationally, right? I mean, it's not like most of us have been here, you know, oh my goodness, our company's been around since 1918. No, you weren't allowed to have one. So in that regard, you know, understanding what some of your goals need to be. Our businesses need to be incorporating our families, or at least our children, right? There's a proper way to do that, to make sure that our children are involved in reaping the benefits, but also are getting paid for the work that they're doing at various ages. Making sure that your accountant understands that that is a goal of yours and how you do that, how they go about that, how you are protecting your assets. Because, you know, once you start making hundreds of thousands of dollars, things start to move really, really quickly. And you've got to make sure that you're not only enhancing those assets, but that you're also protecting those and your personal ones. Making sure that there's enough space between so that, you know, personally, you're not going to end up hurt when things go awry, because they just will at some point. Also making sure that you are understanding what kind of pay structures are you willing to invest in? Are you wanting to pay, you know, my business is much more seasonal. The bulk of my people come in the summer in our heavy, heavy months when we have hundreds of students per week. But that looks different during the school year. So in that instance, you know, there are different pay styles that are associated with those different time frames, and what someone is doing versus the whole year versus a certain, you know, temporary time period. So you want to really take note of that and understand the implication of what that the tax liability is going to be. And then also in the kind of work you're doing, is there a way that you need to help to supplement or another service offering that you can provide that will help to fund, you know, what you may need to do?
Thank you for joining us for Doctor's Orders. You can contact Dr. Baker by phone at 1-855-249-4677, by email at info@drbaker.us. You can learn more on our website at www.drbaker.us. Be sure to tune in every Monday through Friday at 2 p.m. right here on 1320 AM, 103.9 FM, and on www.1320thevoice.com.